Heavy hearts in the hockey world. It's the Monday edition of Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Nick Alberga, joined alongside Justin Bourne and Anthony Stewart, producer Matt Marchese, as well as technical ops Dylan Brown and Lance Kennedy along for the ride as well. It honestly would be unjust not to start with the tragic news out of Michigan earlier today. It was announced that Columbus Blue Jackets netminder Matisse Kivlinix has passed away. The Latvian suffered an apparent head injury during a fall fleeing a hot tub with several others following a firework malfunction. We pass along our deepest condolences, thoughts, and sympathies to his family, friends, teammates, as well as the Columbus Blue Jackets organization. Just a difficult, difficult story today, guys.
Yeah, just awfully tragic. You know, my condolences and thoughts go out to his family. Tragic story and such a shame, such a disappointing waste of talent and life yet to be lived. So very, very sad news.
Yeah, it's definitely sad, and my condolences to the family and the Columbus Blue Jackets organization. It's very, very tough at 24 years old dying.
Yeah,
and I think it's really, really tragic. And just the fact that, this was a really, really good hockey player doesn't make it any easier in any sense of the word. So condolences to the family. But for other players out there, it made me put everything a little bit better perspectively. And, just when I'm thinking I'm having a bad day, you know, it could be a lot worse there. So condolences to everybody involved.
Very well said. Life is very precious. Kivlenix was 24. It's always a tough transition, guys, but we move forward here on the program and look forward, of course, to Game 4 of the Stanley Cup Final tonight. Chris Johnston of Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada will drop by in about 25 minutes or so from now. A lot to discuss, and Justin, it seems like it's been a long, long time since Game 3. We got the extra day. Do you make anything different of this series, knowing that extra day is in mind, knowing some of the words that have come out over the last couple of days? Or do you think it's finished tonight?
Well, I do think differently about it, and I do think it's probably finished tonight. Yeah. But I think differently in that I think he gives Montreal a better chance. I really do. They've played more hockey than than any team, right? They down the stretch they had that condensed schedule, COVID related, and all the way through the playoffs here, it's just been, it feels like game after game every other day for them for God knows how long. So I think it's good for them to have the extra day's rest they needed more than anything, to step back from things rather than just continue on in that hamster wheel. So fresh start. They made some actual changes to their lineup, right? They brought in, I believe, Kulak and Romanov, as well as Evans. Yeah. So some major roster changes there. So yeah, it's a good chance for them to sort of hit the reset button and try to come at Tampa from a different angle.
Yeah, when you hear their interviews, their post-game interviews after Game 3, they were saying there's no quit in the group, but, the play is sort of telling a different story. You just look a team that's fatigued out there, and especially Carey Price, who looks very, very sharp most games. He just looks like he's overwhelmed with some of these shots and the traffic that's Tampa Bay has been sustaining this whole entire series. So, again, I'm singing a different tune than I was last week, but again, there's no shame in Montreal's game. They had a great, great run, but they just seem like they're overwhelmed by this Tampa Bay Lightning team.
Look, I mean, you never say never. Certainly they're up against it. Certainly the odds are not in their favor. Only four teams in NHL history have come back from being down 3-0. Only one in the Stanley Cup Final, the Toronto Maple Leafs back in 1942. We remember it like it's yesterday, obviously. But, I mean, this is going to be tough. The Pittsburgh Penguins went back-to-back in 16-17. I just look at these two squads, and I just think there's just big-time differences. And Justin, again, we talked about it on Friday. The depth of the Tampa Bay Lightning, that again, it wasn't really about the big boys in Game 3, and they still threw six on the board. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, they threw six on the board. Vasilevsky didn't play well, and they won by three or whatever whatever the score was. I mean, like, it had to be frustrating for Montreal. I feel like that was a bit of a missed opportunity, actually getting a couple of weak ones from Andrei Vasilevsky. But that's, it really just does speak to the way that this team is constructed, and that it doesn't have to be the top guys every single night, and that they can be effective all through their lineup. Tyler Johnson, this guy, they put him on waivers twice during the season. No one wanted him, and he scores two big goals for them. So that's the type of guy you love to have in your bottom six. Competitive, works hard, doesn't have to contribute, but certainly can pop up at any minute and give you a couple.
Yeah, and you're seeing guys like Jan Rutta scoring big goals. McDonough's playing well. Cernik and Hedman hasn't had to even be Hedman in this series. So it just shows speaks to the depth that this Tampa Bay team has, too. Blake Coleman, Goudreau, that bottom six is just, you know, putting a spanking on Montreal's bottom six, too. So, you know, when you're looking now to build teams in the future, you got to think depth. And I know there's some Lightning fans listening saying, hey, you've never given these guys credit. Why are you giving them credit now? Just because, you know, they've earned it. They've definitely earned it, and they've made me a believer. And, hey, this is a team that's built to go, you know, all the way. And, you know, when are they slowing down? No time soon, in my opinion.
Oh, they're going to be right for the picking, I think, if they do win this, to maybe win three in a row when you start using the word dynasty. And I know it's going to be a bit of a different team, you'd suspect. Seattle enters the fray. Who knows who leaves there? They got the point contract coming up. But there's just so much depth. And it just seems like they've, you know, really understated about this run is maybe more so the job Steve Yzerman has done. Also, Julien Brisebois, the current general manager of this team, in grooming prospects. You know, I just love that a new guy enters the lineup, he produces. You know, the story to me was Matthew Joseph, game three, Laval native, plays in the Stanley Cup final game in Montreal and just has a hell of a hockey game. Arguably maybe the best game of his career at the most important time in his career. And I know he's just 24. But that just speaks volumes to Tampa and every player, guys, knowing their role. They just seem to enter the lineup and do their thing. And more times than not, your casual hockey fan, even us in the media, won't even recognize these guys until they're in the league. Like, it's crazy.
Well, you know, I have quite a bit of experience dealing with this, having been in the minors at the Toronto Marlies when Syracuse was a formidable foe. And these guys were on Syracuse, a lot of these players we're talking about, and seeing them come up and what they looked like there. You know, they've just built such a culture of work ethic and, or, you know, part culture and part the way they've drafted, the type of players they've brought in. You know, some of the guys you don't even see now, the guys that didn't make it on through them, they had a guy named, like, Tanner Richard and a number of players that they just played this kind of grindy style that they encouraged out of everyone, and Joseph fits that mold. You know, Yanni Gord came up through that system, is so effective. You go through their roster. I mean, a ton of these guys touched that American League system, and it was just, it's incredible the way that they have developed their draft picks, and it's what they're filling out their roster with as they look poised to win their second cup. It's a great lesson for NHL teams that maybe you won't develop superstars, but you can develop the guys that'll just play on the cheap and be good for your team in the big minutes.
What I think what makes them successful, too, is just a belief in the system and the organization top to bottom. And it goes back to Matthew Joseph. You know, he scored 12 goals this regular season, and he was scratched. Could you imagine this market if they scratched, you know, someone with 12 goals in 55 games on pace for 2025? I think it would be a big media storm. So what's great about this organization? Well, from top to bottom, a lot of guys have come within the system. There wasn't trades. It wasn't free agent signings. A lot of guys were in the AHL. They bided their time. Guy like Yanni Gord was in the East Coast Hockey League for a while as well, too. So it's an organization from top to bottom, and I think that's why they're having success as well.
It really is a contrast when you look at these two organizations, with exception to a couple guys, the notable guys, but the drafting and development. And I bring that up because Jesperi Kotkaniemi, guys, I understand he struggled the last couple games, but as Justin mentioned, Kotkaniemi is out tonight. Jake Evans back into the lineup. What are they doing here, Justin? Like, why do they keep going back and forth? It seems like every time Kotkaniemi turns a corner, I thought he was brilliant in the first couple series. At some point in time, you got to learn on the fly, no?
Yeah, I guess they figured out it's not the time for learning. Down 3-0 and things aren't going well. You know, I don't necessarily see it from Kotkaniemi the way that he gets talked up sometimes by the media. Like, I do see a guy who sometimes seems not slow, but, you know, he is not quick, and there's not that sort of dynamism and that pop and whatever. Like, he can put together good runs a game, but he's still a really young kid, and he's you know, yet to really establish any sort of long-term footing. So for them to make a toggle like that, I don't mind it. You know, it can be a good lesson that no one's entitled to anything, and they got to do something here. So I guess at this point, they're just throwing whatever they can to the wall to see what sticks.
Yeah, and I read on Twitter, this is not my fact, but he was leading this team in even strength scoring in this whole entire playoff. So it's a bit of a head-scratcher, too. But you look at some of the organizations that are bringing these young guys on, and they're putting them in a position to succeed. And I know it's not really a great comparison, but a player like Shabbat, they're playing him 30, 31 minutes a night because they want him to be a number one defenseman. And he's had some bumps in the roads. He's had some minus three, minus four games. But eventually he will turn into a number one and star in the National Hockey League. So they got to find a way to bring your young guys on and give them meaningful roles, because after this playoff now, you're looking at possibly Philip Deneau re-signing somewhere else. Now Suzuki's might slide into your number one slot. Who's going to slide into number two? If you're messing around with Kotkaniemi's ice time and his confidence and you put him in that second line role and he's not really ready for it, it's going to be a tough situation. So you've got to play your young guys, give them a time to succeed. If not, you're going to be struggling. Then you're going to have to keep going to the well and trying to bring in short-term solutions. So play the kids, give the kids a chance, as they say, and you never know what you'll get.
Yeah, just I'm with you there, Stewie, because I just think you look at the body of work for the most part with Kotkaniemi and a team star for offense. It's just befuddling that you would take him out, put a grinder in like Jake Evans, and maybe it works out for Montreal tonight in Game 4 of the Stanley Cup Final. Again, Chris Johnson coming up in about 20 minutes or so from the Bell Center to break it down. It's Nick Alberga, Justin Bourne, and Anthony Stewart here on Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. The goaltending, obviously a big topic of conversation. I agree with you, Justin. Vasilevsky wasn't great in Game 3, but that's just Tampa. They just find different ways to win hockey games. And certainly with Montreal throughout the postseason, the goaltending was going to be under the microscope, and Carey Price has exceeded expectations, more so because they can't score goals. And this is not a new thing. Like, all season long, notwithstanding maybe the first month, this team could not score. But it's 13-3 games. We all know the volatility of that market. They're screaming for Jake Allen, some people, and Justin, I just do not get that.
No. You know what's interesting about how Price has played so far is I find it hard to look at any, one or two goals and be like, Price, that's got to be, that's on Price, that's a complete softy. But more what I notice is, the Kucherov goal, it's like a 2-on-0, kind of 2-on-1, 2-on-0 backdoor, he redirects it in. It's like, that should go in. That goes in on almost every goaltender. But it hasn't been going in on Carey Price. So you can't blame Price for not stopping that. But like those unbelievable saves where he has to read some lateral play, he's kind of been making those. So it's like, I'm not going to sit here and say like I think Price has played terribly, but he's definitely not doing the things he did early in playoffs that gave Montreal such a great advantage.
Yeah, I think with Price, what separates him from a lot of the different goalies is the timing of the saves. And typically where I notice where he'd usually make the saves where he did it in Game 3 was the Hedman, a minute and a half after
Ruta
goal.
Him,
Yeah, or on the Tyler Johnson, a minute and a half after the Kucherov goals. He usually makes that save no matter how spectacular, unspectacular it is. He usually makes that save. He doesn't let two back-to-back ones in a short time frame. So I think that's sort of maybe a sign of fatigue because he usually is on the ball when it comes to those types of goals.
I know he's under the microscope, clearly. He's had just an unbelievable run. And to try to pin this, I think, on Carey Price is unfair. And I think you guys would agree. But the big thing for me, guys, Montreal has 5 goals in 3 games. I don't know what series you expect to win when you score 5-3, especially, Justin, against a team like the Tampa Bay Lightning, who could easily score 3-4 a night.
Yeah, so I wrote about that on the weekend, about Montreal's offense and just in general in the postseason. Brian Burke was big on this, that you have to have a team built that can play a number of different ways because you're going to run into a number of different teams, whether it's a fast team or a big team, defensive team, offensive team. Can you hang with teams that can win in different ways? And Montreal hasn't really had to do that. A team like Tampa Bay, who scores the way they do, yes, Montreal can still be good defensively, but Tampa's going to get their goals. So can you win a game 4-3? Well, we haven't seen Montreal be able to do that this playoffs, have we? Into last game was 11-0 when they scored twice in the playoffs. They just needed to get to 2, and they were 11-0. Which is pretty incredible. Asking them to get to 3, to get to 4, they just don't seem to have the firepower to get there, and I think ultimately that's going to be their undoing.
Yeah, Nick, I want to know where the tweets were last round against Vegas, where they only scored, I think it was 15-7 games, right? So they're relying heavily on their defense and their goaltending.
That's fair.
So again, they weren't a high-powered offense in this playoffs. They were getting it done by committee, timely scoring, a great penalty kill, great goaltending, and it's just not coming up this series.
No, and it's totally fair. I think, you know, the way you break it down, but just watching the games, it's just a lot different. Like, I think the biggest noticeable difference for me from any other series to this one, guys, is just the turnovers, right? Like, we did not see that at all. In fact, Montreal was a team that was taking it to the other teams. When they would turn over the puck, they would capitalize and score. And now it's like a role reversal. Tampa keeps doing it, Anthony, and Montreal has no answer. So I think that's part and parcel to Price struggling, is he's not, you know, looking at different opportunities as he was earlier on in the postseason. I just collectively, they just have not been good, have the Montreal Canadiens. But I think obviously you give a lot of respect to what Tampa's doing, right?
Yeah, you got to give Tampa respect, because usually when you make a mistake or there's a breakdown, it usually ends up in your net every three or four times. But it just seems like every one or one and a half times there's a mistake. So to play that perfect hockey, it is a game of inches and mistakes, but it just seems that Tampa is so dialed in that every single minor breakdown is in the back of their net, which is very, very tough to recover from.
Yeah, that it's so funny that this team has gotten here on the backs of that consistent play. You know, I have made comments that I owed an apology to Ben Sherratt and Joel Edmondson, who I, you know, have been like nearly flawless through the playoffs. No turnovers, just playing tough in front of the net, reliable hockey. And so, you know, you go back to the game there where the Edmondson does a reverse directly behind his own net and banks it out in front for a finish, and Sherratt gets walked by Goodrow before the Coleman goal. Like, you know, they've been perfect. But they aren't perfect defensemen. It was bound to show up at some point here. The timing's just been unfortunate for Montreal that they're kind of, you know, showing both sides of their game.
What happened on that reverse play? I was looking at it like four or five times. I'm trying to think what happened there. Was it?
Well, Edmondson took it from the left side of the net behind the net, and then, you know, the coaches usually say you bump it back towards the corner, and he's bumping it back behind his own net, but he bumped it at such a bad angle. It came above the goal line. Palat just smacked it in the net, you know, from a tough angle.
He was thinking his partner was Caulfield in the middle there, and he didn't go back to get it, I think. But again, it's a tough play. That usually doesn't end up in your net, but I don't understand, right? Every mistake, it's a goal for Tampa, so it's frustrating for sure.
Yeah, that's Tampa to a T, right? They're just going to capitalize and eat you for dinner, and that's what they're doing so far in this series. As for the morning skate, we talked about the changes. Looks like Montreal is going to roll Toffoli, Deneau, Gallagher, Anderson, Suzuki, Caulfield, Lehkonen, Evans, Byron, Armia, Staal, and Perry. I'd love to know where that guy Thomas Tatar is. Remember that guy who had, you know, two unbelievable seasons with the Montreal Canadiens? I think somebody's going to hit the jackpot with Tatar in free agency. I don't know if you guys agree, but I think he's going to land a cheap deal somewhere. Hopefully it's not Tampa, and I think light the world on fire next season.
Did he, like, punch Marc Bergevin or Dom Ducharme or something? How come this guy can't get in? Wasn't he one of their leading scorers?
Analytics got him. Analytics killed him. I remember there was like someone wrote an article, and it was just all the heat maps and the spray charts came out, and he played one more game, and that was the last we held up Tatar. So the analytics community just buried him, and hopefully he'll recover next year. 30 points in 50 games. Give him a break.
Yeah.
He's got 47 tucks in the previous two seasons, 10 and 50 this season, but he went off like,
Team can't score, and he's in the press box.
It makes no sense.
Of course, he's not good. It's a bad Corsi, I guess. It's not.
You're going to put Jake Evans in to try to win a 1-0 hockey game. Good luck. The series is over tonight. I want to get to Tampa Bay Mayor Jane Castor. I don't know if you guys heard the comments, so we'll hear them now for everybody out there who didn't hear them, and then we'll comment on them.
Here's what we would like. What we would like is for the Lightning to take it a little bit easy, to give the Canadians just the smallest break, allow them to win one at home, and then bring it back to the Amalie Arena for the final and the winning of the Stanley Cup. But we don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but they are playing some amazing, amazing hockey.
All right, so anybody in the sports world would know that's a really, 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 really bad take. Anthony, I will give you the floor first and foremost to respond to that.
Well, I'll just leave it at this. The hockey gods only bless or curse the original six teams, so I'll give her a little bit of a pass because she's from Tampa Bay and she doesn't know any better. So if it was someone from Montreal or Toronto or Chicago, I'd have a big, big problem. But, you know, she just wants the cup to come back to Tampa Bay.
If you want someone from Toronto to say it, I suggest it in quiet to numerous people. Like,
Alberga would say that. He'd be the guy saying that on Twitter.
No, because I, you know, funny you say that, but I do that for the most part. And Stewie, I know you're referencing like half my tweets. I actually do that to get the opposite to happen, because weirdly enough, like, I'm into that voodoo stuff. Like, I think I would never say something like this, because I think it could bite you in the rear end. Like, who knows? Montreal's been on an unbelievable run. I know there's no bulletin boards anymore in 2021, but this is as close as you can get to, like, what, stay in your lane. Like, it makes no sense why you'd come out and say something like this when it's so clear. You guys are athletes. You played the game. You're going out there. You're trying to win the hockey game. Like, to suggest that Tampa is going to sit back and have Montreal just go at it and say, you know what, we'll handle this in game five is ridiculous to me, guys.
Well, of course it's ridiculous. It's never going to happen. You know, it's it is, like, in theory, it would be really nice to win at home in front of your family in a packed crowd and whatever. And I think she's making a cutesy point. I don't know how often you've actually encountered bulletin board material, Stewie, but, like, when I was with the Marlies, we did have a couple occasions where we would print something the other team said and post it in the room, you know, and as a player, I saw it a time or two, but, like, I don't think I've ever been motivated by the other team saying something about my team. Like, I always tried hard. You? I don't know.
I could understand if the mayor was Dave Anderchuk or Brian Boyle or even Hulk Hogan. That would motivate me. But if it's some mayor, local mayor that nobody knows, or Jesse Ventura, I'd be like, yeah, let's do it. But again, it's the mayor that probably doesn't know much hockey. You know, it's Tampa Bay, Southern Market. You got to give them a pass. It's a nothing burger for me.
I agree.
All right. Fair enough. Speaking of nothing burgers, wasn't the case for Patrick Maroon. I have to get your breakdown, boys, on this. The chirp. I think it was a pretty damn good chirp on Josh Anderson saying you have as many points as me. And many, you know, I thought it was pretty good. And I wanted to ask you guys on the show at some point in time, who are some of the best chirpers you've ever seen or played with?
Patrick Maroon. Wow, that's a good line. How self-deprecating is that, by the way, to be like, you know how terrible you are? You're as bad as me.
I love it.
It is good. You know, I played with Michael Haley in the minors, and I think it helps being a good chirper if you can, in fact, punch someone's head off their shoulders. So Haley was one of the guys who's very comfortable running his mouth and pretty good at it, too. Smart dude, so I'll give him the nod.
I'll have to go my teammate during the lockout season in Nottingham, and it was David Ling, and just the chirps that he was giving. I'll come up there and sign your lunch pail after the game, or tell your wife it's not Halloween, take her witch mask off. Like, just the chirps, like, all game. I'm like, how are you playing a game chirping people? Then he'd go for a water ski behind the Zamboni. So he was just 24/7 Slapshot. So I urge everybody, you know, have a conversation with David Ling. He is the reincarnation of Slapshot. But the one time I remember, we were in Florida, and Sean Avery stopped beside our bench, and chirped for a good 45 seconds as the play was going on. Like, their bench is yelling, change, 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 and he's just giving it to our guys. Like, oh, I'm going to kill you. Tell your dad this. He was going crazy for 45 seconds. I'm like, oh, my God. Like, this guy is nuts.
Yeah, legitimately, you got to be a little bit off. He's established that he is that, but he's very good at what he did, and he's doing well in media, too, so entertaining guy.
When you guys played, were you like the silent assassins, like, I'll score and make you pay that way, or were you throwing some chirps out there too?
Oh, are you kidding me?
I was chirping.
Terrified.
I was busy chirping the refs all the time. I'd be chirping the refs and you know, calling them by their numbers or telling them to drop the puck. So I was more so chirping during the play, but not on the ice, because I didn't want someone to come and punch me in the face.
I was making dates for beers after the game. I made a lot of post-game hangout plans while lining up for face-offs. Coaches did not like
it. I remember that. My quick story here is lining up during warm-up with my bucket off, and Sean Thorns comes up to me. He's like, hey, are we going to fight today? I'm like, nope. He's like, okay, well, I'm going drinking afterwards, so I'd rather do it without a black guy. See you later. Nice haircut. And he skated off. Swear to God, he skated off.
Yeah, are we going to fight? No, wow. Okay, see you for beers later. Oh, I love hockey sometimes. That makes me happy.
No, because you watch sometimes, you're like, what could they possibly be saying? Like, I know half the time, especially in this era, you know, a lot of these guys know each other, whether it be Instagram or like camps in the off season. So I get that. They're just talking, you know, how's the family? But like, sometimes you watch and they're like, what could they possibly be saying to each other right now, right?
Yeah, it's just a lot of calling people out as frauds, I think.
Yeah, and that was very mild, what Pat Maroon was saying.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Everyone wants to hear the microphones, but please don't. Please don't, for the sake of public relations for the NHL.
I would say the more progressive culture right now would not respond well to a fully microphoned up hockey match.
Like even in the dressing room, like they were doing John Cooper's like pregame speech, and it was like probably 14 F-bombs in a 30-second clip. Right. And that's just him happy. Could you imagine him upset?
Oh, man. I love that type of stuff, but I'm totally with you. You can't have them mic'd all the time. And I wanted to lastly touch on the guy we just talked about chirping, Patrick Maroon. He could do something unbelievable tonight. Like, I think this dates back to the Isles teams, right? To win three in a row here, because it just seems like everywhere Patrick Maroon goes, he did it with St. Louis, his hometown team, did it last year. He's like a perfect example, Justin, of a guy who knows his role and plays it to a T, and he's always a factor, isn't he?
Yeah, there's a great question I saw on Twitter. I think it was Thomas Durance who asked, would you rather be Pat Maroon and have made $12 million in your career with three cups, or like a guy who's got no cups and $25 million? The example, I think, was Benoit Pouliot. I think most people, Stewie, which one would you take? Three cups and 12 or 25 mil, no cups?
Give me the money.
Me too.
No,
you only
no,
get it for I'm one day, anyways. You only get it for one day. You only get it for one day, anyways.
No, you
get to keep the cup. Do I get to keep the cup?
That would be great. Yeah, Stewie got to keep the cup. He made a deal before, but no, I'm on team cups for that one.
All right, fair enough. Patrick Maroon, 33 years of age, gunning for his third consecutive Stanley Cup tonight, makes $900K. One more season left on that contract. We'll hit the break. Still to come, we'll welcome in Chris Johnston of Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada, who's down in Montreal. Could potentially be, if you can believe it, the final game of this wild, crazy 2021 NHL season. The Montreal Canadiens have other hopes and aspirations. We'll see if they can get the job done tonight. It's Nick Alberga, Justin Bourne, and Anthony Stewart. This is Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. All right, back here on the Monday edition of Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Nick Alberga, Justin Bourne, and Anthony Stewart with you tonight on Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada. It's Game 4 of the Stanley Cup Final between the Montreal Canadiens and the Tampa Bay Lightning. The Bolts are looking to become just the second team in the past 22 years to go back-to-back as we welcome in Chris Johnston of Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada. And CJ, first question, how was the extra day off in La Belle Province this weekend?
I wasn't there. I'm actually still down in Tampa, believe it or not.
Oh,
so,
really?
Okay. The extra day off here was okay. It's a little bit long to wait for these games. But, because the quarantine rules were not changing and sure. I wasn't part of the bubble, I had to stay here through until the game 5.
Gotcha. So were you in that Jane Caster scrum yesterday? What did you make of those comments? You played that clip earlier on.
Bold strategy. I don't think that they reflect the views of the Tampa Bay Lightning, their coaches, the players, or anyone. You know, I think that they've been through enough to understand, even at 3-0, even as good as the series looks, that you don't tempt fate that way. And I certainly don't expect that they're going to take a knee in tonight's game to try to win it at home, because, the hockey gods would not view that too kindly.
Chris, tonight the score is 2-1 for Tampa Bay, and Kucherov has an assist. What's the Conn Smythe vote for you at the end of the playoffs?
I'm agonizing on this one.
I know.
I'm one of the people that have to cast the ballot. Oh. And, you know, well, that's a tremendous honor. I find typically it's been easier, at least in my mind. Ovechkin versus Kuznetsov actually a couple years ago was similarly challenging. I'm leaning towards Kucherov, but, you know, if the votes are revealed tomorrow morning, should it end tonight, and I went to Vasilevsky, it's only because I've vacillated on that opinion in the 10 or 12 hours, you know, from when we're talking to when I have to cast the vote. But, you know, for me, it's down to those two, Brayden Point at Dawson playoffs as well. You probably can't go wrong, but it's hard because you look at Tampa as a team, you know, it's different than Carey Price, you know, through three rounds with Montreal, where, you know, he played such an obvious reason why they're there. It's not to say Vasilevsky, obviously closing out all three series so far with shutouts, and you know, you just look at his overall numbers, hard to argue against him, but, you know, he's got a pretty dynamic team playing well defensively in front of him for a lot of those games too. So, you know, I'm certainly not marking him down, but when you're evaluating who's most valuable, you know, Kucherov has been a pretty big weapon for the Lightning during this playoffs.
CJ, the score's 4-2 Montreal with Kotkaniemi in the press box. Do you see him entering game 5?
I do not. I love this crystal balling, though. It's a fun way to look at it. I think it's possible he gets back in. I mean, remember all the way back to the start of the playoffs. Kotkaniemi was scratched for the Habs. He scored a goal against the Leafs, and he put up his four fingers, you know, as a salute to the guys that are kind of the extras, the taxi squad or what have you at that point in time. You know, I see this as a bit of a Hail Mary, you know, at this point of the series, obviously, where things are at. You know, if you were going bold, I might have thought about Jake Allen, too, while I was at it, to be honest, because I'm not sure, you know, changing the bottom pair and bringing in Jake Evans will make a whole lot of difference unless Carey Price, you know, finds some better form for tonight's game compared to what we've seen earlier in the series. But, you know, this is it's such a tough moment, right? If you're Montreal and you're being honest with yourself, you don't even know for sure if you're making the playoffs next season. I think that's a reality of their situation. And, you know, they've had this magical run. You're just trying to do anything to get one more day, and you'll make the decisions for Game 5 if that manages to happen.
Chatting with Chris Johnson, Nick Alberga, Justin Bourne, and Anthony Stewart here in Hockey Central as we get set for Game 4 of the Stanley Cup Final tonight. It's just so tremendous, the depth of this Tampa team. And just every night, it's like a new guy can beat you. And I think when we look back, and I think you just talked about it there, it's got that Dallas vibe, doesn't it, where Dallas was strong last year and obviously some injuries and COVID caught up to them, but they didn't make the playoffs this year. Next thing you know, for how magical this one run, CJ was for Montreal, you know, it's a huge possibility you get back in the Atlantic Division next season and maybe they miss the playoffs. Like, how will you look back at this run for Montreal if it ends tonight?
Well, I'm not going to hold it against them or anything. You know, I think that's a fact of life in the NHL. It's really tough to have a team good enough to have the number of cracks the Lightning have had. I mean, they're the outlier here, right? What's been more normal is seeing a team sort of, you know, do what Nashville did and get to its one final, although they did have a pretty prolonged run of regular season success before that. I just think that there's not that big a margin between a lot of teams in the league. And you're capable, if you catch Lightning in the ball at the right time, of getting there. I think similarly, the trouble with that is you can build a team like, say, the one close to where you guys are sitting now in Toronto, where you've got lots of great players. This year they had, you know, great regular season success, and it's harder to get over the hump because, you know, they're still not all that much better than a lot of the teams they have to play. I think this is just the reality of the league now, and, you know, it's a tough situation going back to the Atlantic. I don't think there's any way around that. I mean, when you look at a regular season, you're subject to even things like injuries and other sort of factors beyond your control when it comes to making the playoffs. And if you're going to be going head-to-head with Boston, Tampa, Florida, Toronto, an improved Ottawa team, there's just room for something to go wrong there. And so, you know, I'll look back on it as really a great story. I think it's been cool to see Carey Price and Shea Weber and guys like that get a moment like this. I'm certainly not saying it's over. I believe weird things happen in sports. I've seen enough weird things happen. I've covered cup finals where I was sure I was going home the next day, and then 8 days later we were still covering it. So, I by no means is it over, but I think it's been a nice run for their veteran players, and I think, you know, but there would be danger for them to just assume that they're going to be here again. And in fact, I really don't believe they're going to operate that way. I think that they have a clear eye here that they still have to get better as an organization, no matter how this turns out, and they're going to have some roster challenges to come, but, you know, at least they have some pretty promising young players like Cole Caulfield and Suzuki that have shown, you know, pretty well for themselves, I think, during this playoffs too.
One roster position that's made me scratch my head a bit is, you know, they struggle to score in general, and Tatar just cannot get in. Where did things sour there? Is there a reason he can't even get a sniff compared to some of these other players, like in Evans?
I think, in a weird way, it's almost like the run of play went against him. You know, he comes out, and then they go on that run. I think they went 11-2 over a stretch of games, you know, from the point where they were facing elimination against Toronto till, you know, getting to the Stanley Cup final. And so you're not changing the lineup. You know, I think that he'd lost some trust defensively with the coaching staff, and they were scoring enough in those games, and they kept winning those games. And then now you get to the cup final, and you're in this moment, and what does Dominic Ducharme say? Well, he hasn't played in a while, and it's a tough spot to put him into. Right. And so I do think it's somewhat situational. I don't think it's like there was no circumstances they would ever play him again in this playoffs or anything like that. I think it's just kind of the way things went for Montreal, where he was in at the very beginning when they were losing. They switch up the lineup, they start winning, and then he can't get back in there. And you know, but it is, I guess it is quite notable given that, you know, the goals have been a struggle, and, you know, they finally get three in the last game and they still lose by three. And so, you know, it seemed to me that what they're trying to do with shifting around the lines and getting Evans in there is, you know, have sort of two checking lines, so to speak, energy lines that they trust defensively. And, you know, try to play a 1-0 or 2-1 game and not try to outscore the Lightning, because that's probably a losing formula, given the way the teams are built.
CJ, is there any update on Alex Killorn's status for tonight? And is there any rush to even get him back with how well Lightning are playing without him?
Well, I think for him, there's probably a rush if there's any way he can play. The fact he took the morning skate honestly surprised me. He left in game one blocking that shot. You're thinking something's broken, even though, of course, no one's confirmed that or said that. And he misses the subsequent two games. So, it looks like he's going to try. I don't know if it's an elaborate ruse or what. But, I would think if there's any way at all that he can play, given what he's meant to this organization, given the moment, I'm sure he'll get in there. But, I really don't have any inside information on what's going on there. They keep things pretty tight with the injuries in this moment.
In conversation with Chris Johnston here on Hockey Central, if you don't mind, love to turn maybe the focus to the Toronto Maple Leafs a tad here, because obviously coming off a disappointing finish once again to this season. What are you hearing on sort of the Maple Leafs front in terms of maybe looking at some additions over the next couple of weeks? Because next thing you know, this season at some point in time this week will conclude, and then Seattle expansion starts soon.
It does. I think that the Leafs will be reasonably active players in free agency, not necessarily targeting the guys that are going to make the biggest headlines or sign the biggest contracts on or around July 28th. But, they do have some roster spots to fill out. And, I think that you'll see them in their depth shopping a little bit, bargain shopping, which I think they actually did quite well last year. I know it didn't turn out in the playoffs for them, but, with some pretty significant cap restraints, they managed to build a very competitive team that had a dominant regular season, certainly their best of the Matthews Marner era. So, I think that you'll see them doing that. It doesn't feel like anything massive's coming, but there's the question of what they do in net with Frederik Andersen likely gone in free agency. I expect Zach Hyman to move on in free agency, although that's not a done deal. There's perhaps still a chance there to make some kind of compromise, but I just think what the market is going to be willing to pay him isn't what the Maple Leafs are going to be able to pay him because of the cap constraints. They'll be active with that cap space. They'll realize if they lose a couple players off the roster, plus whoever they lose in Seattle expansion, and that's only 2 weeks away. Start kicking up soon, but it's been pretty quiet. I don't think that they'll, for example, probably one of the bigger questions of the offseason is how they approach Morgan Riley's situation. He's 1 year out from needing a new contract. I would think once it gets to August, they'll probably at least have the discussion generally about what an extension might look like or what Morgan's looking to do there, and that might inform, the decision they have on him. But, it seems like after the sting of the loss, and it certainly stung, I don't sense that they're going to do anything super, super huge. I think they're just going to try to chip away at the margins and get better there. And if we're going to look at the Lightning as at least somewhat of a composite, I think there's an argument that it makes sense. What's Tampa done in all those years? Granted, they had a lot more playoff success through 2015, 16, 17, 18, what have you, but they just kept, chipping around the margins. And finally, they've really hit on something with Blake Coleman and Barkley Goodrow additions last year and creating that third line with Yanni Gord. That line starts every game for them in the playoffs. It's become a tone setter. And I think it's really helped, what they do as a team. And so I think the Leafs are going to keep the top guys in place and try to find some better fits in the middle of the roster.
It's impossible to predict what's going to happen in this offseason because I don't think we've seen many like it. Salary cap has everyone pretty jammed up, shortened offseason, expansions, a lot going on. Normally, I would expect you to say that there's not a ton of movement expected because of all that, yet we hear rumors about Eichel. We hear rumors about Tarasenko. Duncan Keith might move. Are you expecting a lot of big names to find a way to move despite the fact that everyone seems to be up against that flat cap?
Yeah, I think it's going to be pretty electric league-wide. I think it feels like the conditions are in place despite the cap, which obviously challenges everyone and has historically proven to be something that sort of disincentivizes these kind of moves. I think that the fact we're in a kind of in a pandemic still is something worth considering here. Some teams versus others have legitimate cash type of concerns or making decisions maybe a little bit more based on that than just straight up how they can make their salary cap picture look and work. And, you obviously have a case like Jack Eichel. I mean, the fact that we have a player that's in his prime, that seems to have found his end with the organization in terms of their fit together. I mean, just having an offseason where he alone moves would be major and significant and unusual. You know, I think the Seth Jones situation is going to end with him being traded away from Columbus. There's obviously a number of other pieces that will all fall and flow out of that type of stuff. But, you know, having players of that caliber on the market doesn't really happen, I don't think, every year. And you know, you add in the fact that I expect at least two or three trades before the expansion draft to, you know, for teams, you know, that are worried about potentially what their roster protection issues are there. It feels like a lot of defensemen are going to be on the move here, you know, before July 17th, 18th, and then we get free agency, you know, 10 days later.
CJ, you know, I hate putting you on the spot here, but I'm going to ask you a question here.
You love it.
And I'll preface this by saying, Coach, Nuke Seattle Kraken coach Dave Haxtell is probably listening right now. Are the Seattle Kraken a playoff team next season?
I think they could be. I mean, getting dropped in the Pacific Division isn't the worst outcome, honestly. I mean, that's probably on paper. Look, we haven't seen all these offseason moves, so it's really premature to make these kind of statements, but it's probably on paper the weakest division in the NHL. So I think there's opportunity there for them. I think what we learned from Vegas, and honestly, just the way the expansion draft rules work, I mean, they're going to get useful players. And you know, what worked, you know, a few things worked tremendously well for Vegas, but one of them is they got players that were, you know, off of deep teams that hadn't had opportunities to play, say, up the lineup. And then all of a sudden they go to Vegas and they play up their lineup and William Karlsson scores 40 goals, you know? And so I have to believe that there are other guys out there right now that have just kind of been buried for one reason or another in the organization. Maybe it's just a matter of so many good guys ahead of them. They haven't, you know, really had a chance as NHLers to play more significant minutes, and I could see it working. I think, you know, Dave Haxtell's an old defenseman. I think there's sort of a feeling around the league that Rod Brind'Amour, you know, is likely to really target defensemen. And I think there'll be a few good ones available. You know, when you look at Minnesota's situation, Colorado, Carolina, you know, there's a few other teams that you know, have almost too many good defensemen to protect. And so I do think that there's sort of a path there to immediate, you know, at least being, you know, a respectable team if they play defensively, if they get good goaltending. I know there's a lot of ifs here, but we haven't seen the roster yet. I certainly don't think they're going to win eight games or, you know, something like that, like we used to see way back in the day with expansion teams.
Yeah, it's a lot different right now, not to mention that it was reported the other day they're actually willing to spend to the cap in season one, something we didn't see back in the day for sure. We saw it with Vegas, of course. CJ, you're the man. Appreciate and safe travels home when you do come home, okay?
Thank you very much, guys. Be well.
Thanks. You as well. That is Chris Johnson of Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada. We'll hit the break. We'll wrap things up after this. It's Nick Alberga, Justin Bourne, and Anthony Stewart here on Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. All right, back here to wrap up this Monday edition of Hockey Central. Nick Alberga, Justin Bourne, and Anthony Stewart. Many thanks to producer Matt Marchese for digging this up. If Nikita Kucherov, we believe, wins the Conn Smythe Trophy, he'd become the first player ever not to play a regular season game and then win the Conn Smythe Trophy, to the best of our knowledge, using Sportsnet stats as well. The only Conn Smythe Trophy winner to play fewer than even 25 games in the regular season was Ken Dryden in 1970-71 with just six games. I'll put you guys on the spot right now. Stewie, we'll start with you. If, you know, the series, knowing what we know about it and this run so far for Tampa, who would your Conn Smythe winner be and why?
Yeah, it's got to be Kucherov, just doing what he's done, putting up points, scoring some big goals. And he's not coming from a hand injury or a torn motivator cuff. He had hip surgery. So say what you want about the cap. That is a major, major surgery, and only certain guys can come back and play at a high level. So I'm amazed by that. And, you know, throw in the Masterton next year for him as well. That's how well he's playing.
I like that.
JB? You know, you try to think about taking both those guys off the Lightning's roster and replacing them with a league average player at that position, and what hurts Tampa Bay more. Boy, it's tough, right? Like, it's real tough to say that a league average goalie doesn't hurt Tampa a significant degree. And, you know, they went close series with New York. They needed every save they got. But I just think the way Kucherov changes their power play is the tiebreaker for me. Their power play has been so effective. And every time he gets a touch on that half wall, it's like, is it going back to Hedman, crossing to Stamkos, into point? Is he shooting it? They can't stop it. They're over 30%. So Kucherov, in the end, gets my nod as well.
I'm going to go with Vasilevskiy. I just think maybe it's underspoken a bit, his importance to that team. I think he's, what, surrendered 23 goals in the last 15 games. And I think, quite frankly, he's come up huge. I mean, you look at statistics of Vasilevskiy following a loss here in the Stanley Cup playoffs. They're unbelievable. He's had some clutch performances. I know Tampa was dominant in Game 7 against the New York Islanders, but to post that shutout, they beat the Florida Panthers. They steamrolled the Carolina Hurricanes. So I'm going to side with Vasilevskiy, but it's one of those things where you really can't go wrong, and it's sort of interesting series by series as you go on, because even Braden Point, I think you could honestly make a case for Braden Point, guys, just how many big goals this guy has scored, more so earlier on in the Stanley Cup playoffs, even against the New York Islanders, that I think he would be in the conversation too, no?
I mean, imagine scoring in 9 straight playoff games and not being mentioned for the Conn Smythe. Like, what else do I have to do out here? That's just how good his teammates have been.
But look at the clip that Kucherov's been doing the last 2 years in the playoffs. Yeah. And that's sort of been, you know, the take on and the knock against all these star players in the league. They couldn't do it in the playoffs. So that's what makes it impressive, scoring over a point a game in the playoffs and bringing that level when it's so hard to get points. And I know a lot of them's on the power play, but he's playing great hockey. He's on a whole other level. So I think that's what makes him a star amongst stars in the league, because he's getting it done when it matters most in the playoffs.
All right, so it is prediction time. Justin, we'll start with you. Does Tampa win back-to-back cups tonight?
I think they do. They're just too dangerous. As the game goes on, you know, it settles into things after the initial burst. I think they find their way through. I don't think it'll be a super high-scoring game, but give me a 2-1 or 3-1 score for the Lightning tonight.
Anthony?
4-2 Montreal, and if they don't win, you won't see me tomorrow to defend my
own. Well, you won't see me until Friday, because that's the next time I'm in. But, guys, it's always a blast. I just think Tampa's too much. You know, I think Montreal is going to have a much better effort tonight, but I think, unfortunately, Jane Castor, the mayor, is not going to get her wish, and I think it's over tonight as well. But job well done, guys. Have fun tomorrow, and we'll talk on Friday. Many thanks to Chris Johnson, Matt Marchese, Dylan Brown, and Lance Kennedy. For Justin Bourne and Anthony Stewart, I'm Nick Alberga. Thanks so much for listening. Take care.